After seeing Abraham welcome the three angels a few weeks ago in our Torah portion, maybe you should take a holy highlighter. You have a holy highlighter on you. And underline the importance of and blessing of welcoming the stranger into your hearts and into your lives. We hear Yeshua saying in Matthew 25, 35, "For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in." According to the Berit Chadashah, the Renewed Covenant, when the nations of the world are judged, they will ask Yeshua the question in verse 38 of chapter 25, "When did you see a stranger and take you in?" And the king will answer them in verse 40 and say to them, "Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these brethren, you did it to me." Now the question remains, who are the brethren of Yeshua? Traditionally, these brethren have been thought about as all believers in Jesus the Messiah, what we would call the church. While I don't dispute that interpretation, let me give you another plausible, equally plausible one that must be considered. You have to consider this because the Jewish people are Yeshua's brethren or brothers. You know that Yeshua is Jewish. Still is. Hasn't changed. In either case, welcoming the stranger is to welcome Yeshua himself. The Messiah Yeshua identified deeply with the stranger. He was a stranger here on this earth. As we sat in our sukkah, you remember our sukkah, our booth out there a couple weeks ago? We thank God that the Messiah loved us so much that he left the glories of heaven to take on a human sukkah. He put on his own human sukkah and dwelt among sinful men. He was a stranger to sin. He was a stranger to this earth. He chose to be homeless, but there were those who welcomed him into their homes. The Apostle Peter reminded all believers in Yeshua of in 1 Peter 2:11 that we are all strangers and pilgrims here on this earth. We are just passing through. Heaven is our real home. God wants us to have a heart for our fellow strangers. Hospitality can be defined as the art of receiving with cheerfulness, of entertaining, feeding, and lodging a guest with liberality. A hospital, you know, we all have lots of hospitals where we go when we're sick. Originally, it was a guest house. Our homes are supposed to be like hospitals, places where the wounded, the sick, and the needy find loving care and healing. You know, not all wounds are physical. To be hospitable is to be ready to welcome guests or strangers in a friendly, generous manner without expecting reward. You are giving as unto the Lord because he is your reward. As believers, it is crucial that we grasp the difference between hospitality and entertaining. Hospitality is opening one's home for the Lord's service, an open heart, open home. It's okay to use paper plates and plasticware on Passover. Fellowship is the thing that's important. It doesn't matter that you got beautiful dishes and your house has been vacuumed and cleaned. It doesn't make a difference. What makes a difference is that you're there and willing to be with someone. In the Torah, in Leviticus 19:34, hospitality is specified as an obligation, even a sacred duty. The stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. The word for stranger or alien in Hebrew is ger, G-E-R. It's pronounced G-H-A-I-R, ger, or gehir, no, ger. The term originally referred to non-Jews living in Israel. That is why non-Jewish believers are reminded by the Apostle Paul that before they met Messiah, they were, according to Ephesians 2:12, aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers from the covenants of promise. Abraham is looked to as a model for hospitality. We saw that in Genesis chapter 18 3 weeks ago. We read the account of three men who visited his tent in the heat of day. This encounter occurred when Abraham was 99 years old. He had just been circumcised. It was on the third day after his surgery, which is supposedly the most painful day. He probably was not in the mood for visitors, but God sent them. I guess I've noted that hospitality is not always comfortable, and it's rarely convenient, but always it's a blessing. Abraham was not expecting guests, but when he saw them, the Bible tells us that he ran from his tent door to meet them. He followed what were certain Oriental customs at that time, bowing. He bowed himself to the ground, shachah in Hebrew, to welcome his guests in 18, 2 and 3. In verse 4, he washed the feet. Washing the feet was an integral part of the hospitality because of the dry, dusty soil and sandaled feet. I don't suppose you need to do that here in Nebraska, but maybe in parts out west. Maybe some of our driveways haven't been cleaned in a while. It was part of Oriental etiquette. Customs and traditions, to invite others to partake of food. It was considered much better to eat with others than to eat alone. And guests were expected to be polite, grateful, and to inquire about the welfare of the host family. Look at verse 9. They asked how Sarah was. They inquired about his family. They were to eat whatever was set before them, and part with a blessing. No, I do not like green eggs and ham. Do not serve them to me, Sam, I am. But you're supposed to eat what's put before you. Abraham was a model host. Offered his guests a morsel of bread to refresh their hearts. Of course, that morsel of bread turned out to be a full meal with cakes, tender calf, butter, and milk. He was, after all, acting Jewish. I had a Jewish grandmother, and all she thought about was feeding us. Eat, eat, eat. And whenever I went to my mother-in-law's house, she wasn't Jewish, but she might as well have been. Eat, eat, eat. How many mothers do you know don't make you eat, eat, eat? Oh, don't eat. You ate too much already. You never hear that from a mother anywhere. We're all Jewish mothers. Yeah. It's also interesting to note how quickly he moved. The following words in Genesis 18 convey this. He ran, he hurried, he quickly, and again ran and hastened. When Abraham had set the food before his guests, he stood by them under the tree as they ate. I guess I would recommend that you sit down with your guests when you have them over to eat. Don't stand up. You know, find yourself a chair. Hospitality has its rewards. Look what happened to Abraham and Sarah. One of the three guests happened to be the Lord himself. Yeshua was there. Wow. You know who's going to show up at your door? He promised the couple that Sarah would have a son. When Sarah laughed at this seemingly preposterous statement, the Lord said, "Is anything too hard for the Lord?" Extend hospitality. You never know whom God may send to your door or what blessing he has planned for you. You never know who you're going to walk into, who you're going to meet on the street, who's going to be ringing your doorbell. You never, never know. The theme of hospitality continues throughout the Holy Scriptures. In 1 Kings 17:9, a widow in Zarephath is commanded by God to extend hospitality to the prophet Elijah. In Isaiah 58:7, the Lord instructs believers to share your bread with the hungry and bring the poor who are cast out to your homes. How many of you do that? Go down to the mission and invite some of those people over to your home. Go out on the street. I was watching this episode of Monk. How many of you watch Monk sometimes? It was about these three bums that were out in the street, hobos, who came to him. They wanted him to solve a murder because he was a detective. And he didn't want, you know, he's very fastidious. He doesn't want people in his house and stuff. And so they said they would pay him, and they gave him pop cans to take to the machine. They said, here's $14 worth of bottles that you can cash in, you know. And three of them they wouldn't take. They were Canadians. So he went back and says, I only got $13.85 from you guys, and you owe me. At the end, he ended up feeding him a meal in his house, and they brought him some gravy that they had made. God knows. I don't know. That's if you're not like Monk. I don't think any of you are like Monk, so I think we could all probably handle that coming into our house, people like that in your house. You got to do that. You got to extend hospitality. In 58:7, it said, did I say this? To share your bread with the hungry, bring the poor who are cast out to your homes. I just said that. This bringing in of guests or gathering is of travelers is considered one of the most important functions of the home. The Hebrew word used for hospitality in this sense, hachnasat orhim. One great rabbinic saying concerning hospitality is, great is hospitality, greater even than early attendance at the house of study. Yeah, don't get here so early. Or than receiving the Shekinah. Hospitality is more important than receiving the Shekinah glory of God. Traditional Jewish teaching on hospitality stresses the absence of discrimination. The home is open to all classes and all kinds of people. Graciousness and cheerfulness is encouraged in receiving guests. Hospitality is never to be abused. It is considered an act of great baseness for anyone to do an evil against those who have offended him. Hospitality. Psalm 41:9 says that, and John 13:18. And remember the guy named Judas? Who was kind to him? Even though he knew all about him. Partaking of salt together has traditionally been regarded as a pledge of friendship. It was equivalent to a solemn covenant, especially among Arabs today. Why not rent a good movie and share popcorn and put salt on it with someone? I would suggest the great movie for you is called Ushpazin. It's a Jewish movie. It's a great movie on hospitality in Hebrew. It's in Hebrew, but it has English subtitles. It is the most greatest movie about hospitality there is. Man, he didn't want those guys at his sukkah, did he? He did not want them there. The Passover Seder begins each year with an open invitation. You know, the first words of the Passover Seder are always, let all who are hungry come and eat with us. The Lord's table is open to all who are spiritually hungry. God is a God of the open invitation. His spirit is a spirit that invites, he that says, come. God is always inviting you. You can always come and see God. He doesn't close his doors because, oh, look who just drove up. God doesn't do that. The new covenant opens with a hospitality deficit in Luke 2:7. The Messiah is ready to put on his earthly tabernacle, which is a baby's body, but this stranger from heaven finds no room at the inn for him. Boy, starts off. Before he's even born, there's no hospitality for our Messiah, is there? No welcome, no hospitality. The Holiday Inn is full. Finally, a manger, a sukkah in Hebrew, shows up, is made available to him. It was a humble dwelling. But that did not stop the glory of God from shining forth from that place, did it? Guess what? Your humble home has that same potential. You could be that beaming light on your whole neighborhood. Imagine, Turtle Creek would come alive if our house just shined in the wilderness and the darkness. Yeshua loves to be welcomed into homes. Did you know that? When we saw Zacchaeus, a despised tax collector, looking for him from his vantage point in a sycamore tree, he said to him, and this is in Luke 19:5, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your house. There we have that make haste to show hospitality again. Interesting, because when extending hospitality, there is often a great deal of last-minute scrambling. Vacuum this, vacuum that, put all that stuff away, hide the dishes, take out the dog and pull out the trash, yaggity yak. In Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 10 through 13, believers are exhorted to present their bodies as servants to God, of God, to think as he thinks, to be humble, to exercise their gifts as members of Messiah's body, and to show sincere brotherly love. Wow. We are challenged to be fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. Verses 14 through 21 of Romans chapter 12 goes even further to encourage hospitality to one's enemies. Keep your friends close and keep your enemies closer. This radical hospitality enables us to overcome evil with good. While leaders in the body of Messiah are to be hospitable, that's me, I guess. 1 Timothy 3:2, Titus 1:8, I have to be hospitable. All believers, all of you, I assume you're believers. Yep, great. Are called to be, according to 1 Peter 4:9, hospitable to one another without grumbling. You can blow your nose, though. It's in tight. That's good timing. He who has must also have compassion and share, according to 1 John 3:17. Strangers are to be welcomed without respect of persons, according to James 2:2-4. The early believers in Yeshua made a regular practice of offering hospitality to one another. Acts 2:46 says, "So continuing daily with one accord in the temple, breaking bread from house to house, they ate their food with gladness and simplicity of heart." They even picked each other up. They had one car, an accord, said here. Hebrews 13:12-2, "Let brotherly love continue. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some have unwittingly entertained angels." Do you know any angels? Have you met any? That are not from Los Angeles? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you have. Invite people over. You know, nowadays, no one really just drops in on you these days. You have to invite them. You know, people are, I don't know, just don't want to get into your space. You got to invite them. Someone might be lonely. You might meet someone who's very lonely. You don't know what's going on in that person's life. And you don't know what's going on in that person's life. Maybe you're going to make the best day ever for them. Hospitality offered during one of God's Moedim, his special appointment days, is considered a special blessing. And I think Thanksgiving is part of Sukkot. So to me, that's part of God's Moedim. The holiday we just had is the only American holiday that I celebrate with joy and gladness and cheerfulness. Well, guess what, folks? Another holiday season is upon us. The whole world is into holidays this next month or two, right? Even the atheists believe that January 1st is New Year's. And that's when they give their gifts. You know, I mean, the whole world is into holidays within the next month. I believe that the word of the Lord to us is hospitality. So many people are lonely. So many people are hurt. Psalm 68:6 tells us that God sets the solitary in families. As the Holy Spirit leads, invite the stranger into your home. It may not be much more than a sukkah, but love and fellowship can make a simple meal turn into a feast. Oh, give thanks to the Lord. Hodu, is that what we sang before? Give thanks to the Lord. Call upon his name. 1 Chronicles 16:8-9. Make known his deeds among the people. Sing to him. Sing psalms to him. Talk of all his wondrous works. Giving thanks to God is a very Hebraic concept. The verses from the book of 1 Chronicles are part of a psalm of thanksgiving that were written by King David on the occasion of the placement of the Aron Kodesh, the Holy Ark of the Covenant, in the tabernacle that David had erected for it in the city of David. We thank the Lord for touching hearts through Adat HaTikvah Tzion. As his servants, we acknowledge that any fruit produced through us springs forth from the grace and power of God as we get out of the way and allow him to live in us and through us. Ephesians 2:10 says, "For we are his workmanship, created in Messiah Yeshua for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them." Thank you, family and Messiah, for making it possible for us to minister by your faithful, loving support. 1 Thessalonians 1:2, we give thanks to God always for you all, making mention of you in our prayers. Let's look at the root of the concept of thanksgiving in Hebrew. As it turns out, thanksgiving and hand go hand in hand. Here's how. The Hebrew root word for thanksgiving is yada. You'll notice that the word yad is part of yada, and it's also the word for hand. Giving thanks to God is literally to hold out the hand, to revere or worship with extended hands. We should not sit on our hands when we thank God. Our outstretched hands in worship are the ways in which we can say thank you, Abba, for all you have done for us, especially for sending us your Son, the Messiah, Yeshua, to set us free from the power of sin and death. Try saying these psalms aloud with your hands lifted and extended in worship. Psalm 30, verse 12, "O Lord my God, I will give thanks, yada, to you forever." Psalm 35, 18, "I will give you thanks, yada, in the great assembly." Psalm 92, 1, "It is good to give thanks, yada, to the Lord." Another more familiar word for thanksgiving comes from the root yada, is todah. Many of you have heard that word. Todah also includes the idea of extending the hand, and it is written as follows. Todah is the word today that we use in Hebrew to say thank you. Todah rabah means thank you very much. Todah rabah Abba. Thank you, Daddy. And is a phrase worth learning for use in your personal devotions. Todah Abba. Todah rabah Abba. Do you have a home to live in? Be thankful. Anybody here living outside of somewhere else? Do you have enough to share with someone else? Be thankful. Can you afford to rent a movie and invite someone over to watch it with you? Be thankful. Do you live in the United States of America? Be thankful. Were you a stranger and are now part of God's people, Israel? Be thankful. Were you on the way to hell and are now on your way to heaven? Be thankful. I am thankful for each one of you, fellow pilgrims, as John Wayne would say, you pilgrims, on this exciting journey to the promised land. Thanksgiving blessings to you and your family. Oh, by the way, of the 102 passengers that came over on the Mayflower, only 41 of them were pilgrims, religious dissenters who sought a new life and freedom of religion in America. They were practicing Leviticus 23, the Moedim, when they decided to hold their Sukkot celebration. And later on in 1861, it got changed to November. Used to be in October by some president named Lincoln, who made it a national holiday. But they were celebrating Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles. Again, oh yeah, the other 61 passengers on that boat, or ship, what do you call those things, were strangers by the pilgrims. They were merchants, they were craftsmen, skilled workers, indentured servants, and several young orphans. I'll bet some of them were even Jewish. You know, they were strangers Toda Abba. Thank you, Father.